Good morning, everybody. Welcome to chapel on this nice summer day. Well, I sent puzzlers around the day before chapel yesterday, no exception. Puzzler number one, where was the first European settlement in America? Sarah Rubio said, I think St. Augustine, Florida. I got a stuffed manatee there. I named him Augie. I don't know if we needed to know that, Sarah, but... Caleb Sogren said, in the Americas, it was a Norse settlement in Newfoundland, I believe. We prefer not to use the term Viking. It's somewhat pejorative these days. I didn't know Vikings were so sensitive. In the modern United States, he goes on, I think the oldest settlement is Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I wasn't sure if Caleb was talking about the age of the residents or the age of the settlement. But the real answer is the first European settlement in America wasn't St. Augustine or Jamestown, but San Miguel de Guadalupe on the coast near what is today the Georgia-South Carolina border. Built in 1526, it failed after only 6 months. That's why we don't know about it. Question number two, what is fruit smack? Caleb said, a leading figure in the Children's Pro Wrestling League. Annette Hayward said, was that when Isaac Newton sat under an apple tree and an apple fell on his head, resulting in the discovery of gravity? Janice Sezik said, when you get together with your friends and say bad stuff about kiwis. Well, the real answer is, the real answer is, originally marketed as Fruit Smack, but the name was later changed to Kool-Aid. I like Fruit Smack better, but... Question number three, the world record is 2,510. What's the category? And Janice Sizek said, how many times an Illinois state governor has declared his innocence? I think it's more than that, actually. Caleb was correct. The world record is 2,510. The date was 2009 in Wales. That was the largest number of people dressed as Smurfs in one place at one time. Sometimes these things are just, why would you do that? But anyhow, fascinating stuff. Announcement for next week's chapel. Tony Dungy is speaking at our chapel next Friday, not Thursday, Friday. One guest per employee, no trading or accumulating invitations. All employees will get a copy of his book. He'll sign that plus one other item. So choose wisely. We do have a service award today. Mark, would you do the honors?
Heather Allred has been here 5 years. Come on up, Heather. Heather started in customer service in July of 2005 and became the inside sales assistant in 2006 and sales operations assistant in 2009. Heather says, one of the most enjoyable parts of my job is speaking with my 70-year-old chaplains. For many of them, I'm their one big phone call of the day, so I can find myself on the phone for about 30 minutes just chatting about the weather or their aching body. Overall, it's wonderful to hear how their ministry is impacting lives, and it's wonderful that I get to play a small role in that. Are these military chaplains or
military,
prison chaplains?
Prison, hospital, anywhere a chaplain would be.
Okay, as part of our special sales. I love making the impossible possible. It's fun to come across a situation that requires me to ask, you need what to happen, by when, to be delivered where? These situations allow me to interact with other departments and cash in some brownie points to help make the square peg fit in a round hole. One of my fondest memories is going on an impromptu road trip to Ohio with Lindsay McElroy. We took Jim Tressel's book, The Winner's Manual, all over the northern part of Ohio. And if you didn't know, Ohio is a large state. It was an adventure to provide books for author signings only moments before the author arrived at each location. And Heather says, I'm very fortunate to be part of the Tyndale family. Heather's boss is Sharon Hegland. Sharon says, Heather is a very talented lady. First and foremost, keeping Kevin Clark and Charlie Sweeney organized is no small task, and she does it with efficiency and enthusiasm. She always goes the extra mile for our customers and staff. She's very intuitive, and I know that I can give her just about any project, and she will easily organize and execute it to a level of detail that amazes me. One of her many accomplishments this past year was her coordination of all the processes associated with the CCN broadcast and their product orders for the book So Long in Security. She did a great job of anticipating the many nuances of this customer's system, and she did an excellent job of keeping the orders and communication flowing operationally. How many churches were involved in that project?
300-ish, but we shipped out 735 cases of So Long in Security and Promise of Security booklets and a Travis Cottrell CD that they sent to us.
A lot of coordination of details. Sharon says, Heather has also done a great job serving as the front man for all of the new accounts that come to Tyndale. Most of the special sales accounts she works with do not fit the standard mold, so there's a lot of detail involved, and she always has it under control. On a more personal note, says Sharon, one of the things I love about Heather is her creativity, and that's not necessarily something everyone knows about her. Not only is she a creative communicator, but she's also quite talented with anything crafty. She's always creating great homemade cards, cross stitches, and baby accessories. It's one of the many talents that she uses to serve others around her. I'm so thankful to have her on our team. And Heather, we're all thankful that you're on Team Tyndale, and I'm happy to present the plaque to you from all of us, presented to Heather Allred in honor of 5 years of faithful service.
Congratulations. Well, we'll spend some time in prayer, as we always do during chapel. Anything that we might remember before? I've got a couple of notes. John DePaz having surgery this morning would appreciate our prayers. And David Jackson's sister-in-law, Jody, has some personal issues that could be affected by our prayers. Anything else that we might mention? Well, let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, we are grateful again that we can gather as your children before your throne, grateful that we work at a company that encourages us to do that. And Lord, we present the issues raised today. We ask you to be with John as he faces his surgery. Guide the surgeon's hand. Allow healing to be effected. Be with Jody as she faces her issues, Lord, and give her a sense of your peace and your direction. Lord, for each one of us, we face hundreds of decisions a day. We ask you to guide and direct us, lead our paths, Lord, and allow us to be an accurate reflection of your grace and your truth and your love. We ask all of this in your name, Lord. Amen. Well, I would like to introduce our speaker today, Alice Tyson. I've been saying Tyson all along. It's Tyson. Alice is the founder and executive director of His Wheels International, HWI. Provides pedal-powered transportation with dignity for the able and the disabled through global partnerships as a tool for expanding Christ's kingdom. Would you please join me in welcoming Alice Tyson? Alice?
Well, thank you. It's a privilege and an honor to be here today to share about His Wheels with you. I wanted to start by showing a video, but before I show the video, I just want you to know that the video was made 2.5 years into our existence, and we are, as of May 2005, we are 5 years old, so I will update the statistics after the video.
His Wheels International is a bicycle service organization that assists Christian missions. We provide bicycles and bicycle expertise to individuals both in the United States and throughout the world. We began in May 2005 with a goal to mobilize God's work using Cycles for Christ. We long for bicycle transportation to facilitate life transformation. December 2003, John and Carolyn Luton Becca, missionaries from Tanzania, were asked, "How can our church help your ministry?" John said, "If every church family donated $100, each $100 gift would buy a bicycle, allowing a pastor to evangelize 5 villages and reach many." John's vision was only the beginning. Today, His Wheels International has four ministry divisions. They include international and national bikes and global and national hand-pedaled three-wheelers. International bikes. We purchase bicycles in foreign countries or container them from the U.S. Our first project was getting 10 bicycles to Tanzania. Here you see a container pulling into a village in Angola, Africa. We partnered with Rise International and sent four bicycles for educators. Presently, we have 55 bicycles in seven African countries, and we plan to expand this ministry. Bicycles are serving evangelists, pastors, seminary students, children, educators, AIDS workers, and church leaders. U.S. National Bikes. In this division, we receive donated bicycles, many of which are refurbished by our mechanics. Some bicycles are resold to fund our ministry. Over 600 bicycles have been distributed since our inception. We have a weekly mechanics day where individuals from all ages and abilities work on these bicycles. Here is where multi-generations can spend time together. Children can do mission work locally. The abled and disabled can learn and work together. A junior mechanics program runs in the summer. Students from Wheaton College participate with us. Over 200 people have volunteered more than 3,000 hours. Who benefits from this? Missionary families representing 32 countries and 31 different mission organizations have enjoyed bicycles while home on a year-long furlough. Refugees and immigrants from 18 countries are using over 150 bicycles locally through a partnership with World Relief DuPage. An Eagle Scout candidate and 20 young men from a local Boy Scout troop partnered with His Wheels and collected, refurbished, and donated 20 bicycles to World Relief. Through a partnership with Naperville Presbyterian Church, over 150 bicycles were repaired and sent to New Orleans for those impacted by Katrina. 29 bicycles were distributed through an urban church for Christmas presents to children in need. International students from 14 countries have used bikes while studying in the area. We have had bicycle rallies, including obstacle courses, safety checks, and helmet adjustments. Where do we get our bikes? Cook County Forest Preserve, police pounds, churches, and individuals have donated bicycles. Global Trikes. We bought 5 hand-pedaled three-wheelers in Nigeria for those affected by polio. In 2005, we were challenged by an African government official to begin providing more three-wheelers throughout Africa. Here you see a paraplegic Nigerian pastor walking, using a block of wood as a hand shoe. Why are these trikes needed? They provide dignified mobility to those with polio, those hit by landmines, and those with other types of birth defects. How did this global division begin? In August 2005, Alice Tyson, His Wheels Executive Director, met Kevin Nikolic at a party. After showing Kevin the picture of the Nigerian pastor, Alice said, "I hope to take a welding class to learn how to weld and build hand-pedaled three-wheelers." Kevin said, "I'm a mechanical engineer. I would like to design, build, and pay for the prototype." Kevin continues designing and building prototypes. Who's tried our trikes? Missionaries, healthcare professionals, and the disabled have tried the trikes and offered input as we continue making changes. What is our goal? To assist nationals in setting up small factories where abled and disabled can work together building trikes. Jeremy, a missionary in North Africa, is an example of how our goal is being accomplished. Kevin taught him how to build a three-wheeler. In November 2006, Jeremy took our first three-wheeler to North Africa. 5 hand-pedaled three-wheelers have been distributed. 3 are in African countries. The fourth tricycle was donated to Johnny and Friends International Headquarters. The fifth was sent with Nancy Baidry to Trujillo, Peru. Nancy, a His Wheels board member, was part of a Johnny and Friends Wheels for the World team. U.S. National three-wheelers. Our hand-pedaled three-wheeler prototypes have been part of several presentations. They were featured at Disability Awareness Sunday, as well as in a local elementary school program. Trikes were displayed at a Johnny and Friends Disability Summit. Many individuals stopped to inquire about the three-wheelers. These prototypes were a recreational activity at Johnny and Friends Retreat in Syracuse, Indiana. I haven't seen my husband this happy since before his accident 4 years ago, the wife of a paraplegic stated. Are there any dreams left for his wheels? The answer is yes. Our trike prototyping is taking another turn and allowing us to dream about the possibility of one day forming a hand cycle racing team. How can we get there? Annika, a 9-year-old adopted paraplegic from Belarus, melted Kevin's heart. Annika rode our prototypes for 8 hours at Johnny and Friends Retreat. She has Olympic potential, stated a physical therapist. Annika gave birth to the dream to make a pre-racer hand cycle. This hand cycle is aerodynamic, high-tech, and multi-geared, and will allow Annika to work towards her ultimate athletic potential. Afterwards, with Annika in mind, Kevin named it Sirocco, which means African wind. He said, "I have found what I was created to do." Annika rode around singing, "I'm having so much fun." His Wheels International will never stop dreaming. Thanks for your part in allowing God's work to be mobilized worldwide.
This up front is our production model trike, and afterwards, if you are interested in trying it, you're welcome to it. It is fascinating how it works, and so feel free to come up afterwards. Also, before I get started, just wanted to let you know there are some newsletters in the back, a track telling about my story and how it went from my story into His Wheels. And if you would like to receive our newsletter, you can put your name and address on the piece of paper back there. I'm going to give you the unedited version of what you have just seen. In September of 2003, I met the Lutenbeckas, and I had a great time. And afterwards, I thought, God kept prompting me to have them over. And maybe you've done this before. You've negotiated with God. I don't know how it's worked for you, but that went on for 3 months for me. And the negotiations just got more frequent. They didn't go away. And I still kept giving him my same excuses, but he wouldn't have them. So in December of 2003... 3 days before the Lutenbeckas were going to leave for Tanzania for good, I had them over. God kept saying, have the Lutenbeckas over, have the Lutenbeckas over. No, God, I can't. You don't understand. I thought, I don't have anything to offer the Lutenbeckas. So one Sunday, I invited them over, and I said, do you have plans for dinner? No? Well, why don't you come over? So they came over, but I had to leave church. I invited them from church. I had to leave church early because I felt sick. So I went home to bed, and that's not exactly how I like to entertain. I like to have planned my meal, as most of the women are shaking their heads, but I knew I couldn't plan the meal and have them over for dinner. So I planned the meal and have them over for dinner and feel good. So I had to go to bed for 3 hours. I don't know that it was the most restful sleep, as I realized there wasn't anything in my house that really could be thrown together for a meal. But I had them over, and they walked in, and the first thing they said is, wow, do you live alone? Yes. And being single for an African, single woman, is kind of an oddity. Owning your own home is another oddity. So they said to me, how much do you pay for rent? And I said, well, I don't. I own my own home, and after 4 months of house payments, I paid it off. And they said, well, how much do you make a month? I said, $450. They said, you know, you can't live in America on $450. Well, okay, I knew that too. And then they said to me, how much did you pay for your firewood? We had a fire. I said, I didn't pay for it. I prayed for it. And they said, oh, you're a woman of faith. Well, I asked them how our church could help their ministry, and when they said a bicycle, but they said some other things, but I really can't tell you what else they said, because the night before I'd been reading a book, and I had said to God, you know, God, all the good ideas are gone. And so as they started talking about bikes, and, you know, I'm glad I got one line, at least for the video, but as they started talking, my brain went back to bicycles. At 5, I learned how to ride a bike. It was physical education was my favorite class, isn't it everybody's? Okay, I know it's not. But I learned that in college that it wasn't. Then at the age of 15, I biked from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon on a bike. At 16, from San Diego to Virginia. And 17, England and Scotland. And 28, Israel. 30, the Canadian Rockies. And Florida. I've crossed 30 states and been on 4 continents. And my goal was all 50 states and all 7 continents. Don't worry, I'm going to worry about the last continent when I get there. But anyways, at the age of 30, I woke up one day with what I thought was a severe 24-hour flu. Maybe you've had, you know, you've got a timeline for a flu, 24 hours, right? Maybe you've set some deadlines and you've had authors who've not quite cooperated with you. You know, you've sent emails to them and they bounces back, no forwarding address. You've sent nasty letters to them and you're still waiting for the reply years later. Or you've finally decided, I've had it, you call and you just lay into them. Look, don't you get it that you need to edit this a little different, because the way you are doing it is not going to be a story anybody wants to read? Well, whether you're an editor in this room or not, you might not know it, but we are all editors. And we try to tell the author of our faith, the storyline for our life. I've had all those different things, you know, called and said a few nasty things, and but he's sent the manuscript back without acknowledging any of the things I've wanted him to include. In 1992, I woke up with the 24-hour flu. The deadline was 24 hours. Don't you get it? Okay. Well, now it's 17 years later, I believe, and the condition lives on, and it's called chronic fatigue syndrome. And so by the age of 30, I had only worked 4 years full-time in my adult life, and little did I know when I woke up that morning and called in to work that it was going to be my last day of reporting to work. And I have struggled with the disability all these years. It's a miracle that I can even stand in front of you because at one point my heart rate go from 80 to 180 in 30 seconds standing still. Rooms that are over hotter than 68 often create trouble. So I don't have my security blanket, but I do have my ice vest below in case I needed it for standing here. Every day I face some sort of chronic fatigue symptom. It might be a brain fog, it might be severe trembling, arthralgias, headache, my day called short because of extreme fatigue, tunnel vision. So I have a four-year-old car and it has 19,000 miles on it. So it has affected every area of my life. Well, in 2003, in March of 2003, my long-term disability insurance, I received a letter saying, your disability insurance has been terminated. So that was only months before September. That was March of 2003, and I had the obvious questions. Would I be homeless? Why me? How am I going to make it? I don't come from a wealthy family. I come from a family who stewarded their finances well, but not a wealthy family. So I wasn't expecting any trust funds to fall to me through inheritances. And I thought, how am I going to make it? So it's right in the midst of this crisis that, and I'm having my own pity party, and my fears are high on the stress chart, and God challenges me to have the Luttenbeckas over. I don't have anything to offer them. But they had something to offer me. They had a vision to offer me. And when they left that day, I had a bike out in front of my house just because I like biking. And they said, oh, is that the bike you ride all the time? I was embarrassed because, no, it was the bike I leave in the rain just as a, what do you call it, something to show out in front. So they left, and I came home, and God and I grappled. He challenged me to give $1,200, the cost of my road bike, to buy bicycles in Tanzania. But you see, we had a conflict. I was making $450 a month, and I had no idea if I'd ever make more. And of course, our bank account can never have enough money in it when our security is, when we're feeling a little too low on our security realm. But God won, and I did too. I gave the money, and within a week, the whole money amount returned to me. Now, of course, I didn't tell anybody what I had done, because what sounds like faith today would have been foolishness yesterday. But one of the things I've learned through that experience is that we're often known to procrastinate. You know, I almost missed my life calling. I almost missed the opportunity to have a vision that was way beyond me shared with me. Procrastination, the sin of omission. Tomorrow. Oh, you know, God, you don't get it. You've dealt me a raw deal, and I don't have anything I want to share of myself. Well, from that point, then I thought, I'll give away 100 bikes in my lifetime. In 2004, I was at church and heard a speaker who was from Nigeria, and he bought the trikes in Nigeria. I came back, showed the pictures, and my mentor, my late mentor at the time, was Robert Walker, the pioneer of journalism. He had prayed for 10 years for me and daily, and I was the last of the people he taught to write, so I called him my professor. And he told me, Alice, this goal is bigger than 100 bikes. He said, matter of fact, it's bigger than any organization I have helped to begin. So we began in 2005, and as you noticed, the first 5 years were out of a house. Yes, that house was in Wheaton, which is a miracle. I had at times 200 bikes in my backyard, and only once was one stolen, and I found it next door at the apartments and identified it because it had our sticker on it. The first 5 years were done out of my home, and then in that year ended May of 2005. And in January of this year, I had gone to Florida to meet on vacation, but I had found the book, The Greater Mission by Steve Saint, and I was reading it on the airplane. I thought, I need to go visit this guy. So it was Christmas week, called him. The office was open. I went and took a tour. And by the end of the month, I had flown out four of my board members, and we have partnered with Steve Saint to see if we can, where they go, if we can get our trikes to some of those places. I came back from that exhausted from having been away for so long, and travel is very hard on my health. And the Lord started pointing out that we needed space. We needed to get out of where we were for safety of not tempting my neighbors beyond what they could. I didn't want to have a Christian ministry on one hand and be promoting jail time for petty theft on the other hand. But that was a real concern of mine. So in April, my accountant said, Alice, I know of this piece of property. I said, yeah, I know that piece too. Well, he's hard of hearing, so he looked at me like, what? I said, oh, just go, come back, tell me where it was. So I came back, and sure enough, it was a piece of property that 6 months earlier I had gone by, stopped and looked, and I thought, no, I must go home and pray. So I went home and prayed. The next month I went, and I took the phone number down and went home, and I thought, no, I must go home and pray. By April, I had prayed 500 hours, and so when he brought me the number, I thought, well, can't use that as an excuse. So I called, thinking I'm making a cold call, and the person on the other end said, hey, do you remember me? I'm Jane. I said, well, yeah, I remember you, but this is a cold call. I'm not supposed to know anybody. And I went over to check out the building, and ran into Rob Elliott, Jim Elliott's cousin, who owns the property. And I told him, look, we're either going boom or bust. My thoughts were, my business plan included having a good amount of money in the bank. I don't know, $100,000, that sounds nice, doesn't it? have it all planned out, know where every month's rent was going to come from. You know, responsible business person. Well, that wasn't our situation. Our situation was, it's the worst economic times there are, and we maybe had $10,000 or $15,000 in the bank, and I said, Rob, we're either going boom or bust, and I don't know how to take this tremulous step with security. But he said, well, you can get out of your lease whenever you need to. So we have a 2-month clause in our lease. So I thought, okay, well, we had some zoning issues. I thought, okay, God's going to, block the road there. No. Instead, where it usually takes 3 months to get through zoning, we walked in and out within 20 minutes, and the guy I was with said, wow, if the rest of my day goes like this, I'm going to have an awesome day. And the next day, I felt, this was April 21st, I felt God was calling me to not put off what I could do today, not put it off till tomorrow. So on Tuesday of that week, I went and I, with fear and trepidation, recognizing it went against all business standards, I signed the lease. And people say, are you sure you could afford to sign the lease? And my answer is, I was in a quandary. I had two things I couldn't afford. I couldn't afford the lease, but I couldn't afford the fact that I'd spent 40 hours over Easter weekend praying, and God had really confirmed to me that if we didn't take this step, we would not grow any further. So at least I had a promise for one of those, and that was I serve the one who owns a cattle on a thousand hills. I didn't have anything other than God's continual reminder, if I wasn't willing to take a step, I would not grow. We would not grow any further. I don't know what decision you would have made. I felt I was left with no decision but to sign the lease. So we signed the lease, and I went home and prayed some more, thinking, what have I just done? And the next morning, I got a call from Jeremy. And he said, we have just approved a grant for you. Well, I hadn't applied for it. I didn't know it was coming. And matter of fact, I was on the other line, so that was, you know how you call it, call annoying? But I was glad I took that annoying call. I was just stunned how God provided. Then the next day was the trash days in Glen Ellen. We outfitted our whole office through, and it looks nice. You would not come in and think our whole office was outfitted with trash, would you, Jim? Okay. So we outfitted, you know, I hadn't thought that you need a budget for furnishing a place. Well, we didn't need a budget for it. And then I'm not too shy to tell you that what Glen Ellen didn't provide, Wheaton College's dumpsters did provide. But the whole time through this, what I am so stuck with is that we go to church and we all know the sins of commission. You know, don't have sex outside of marriage. Don't drink. Don't smoke. But the question is, how about the sin of omission? Who is affected by your sin of omission or my sin of omission? And the numbers for me are staggering. I was telling some four young children about His Wheels one day from Senegal. And, you know, four boys from the age of 3 to 12. If you've ever taught Sunday school to any of those, you realize none of them stand still for a minute. And they were engaged asking me all about His Wheels. And I said, you know the sin. You know, your mom always tells you the obvious, don't fight with your brothers. But how about when God asks you to do something and you don't? What about that? Is that a sin? And I said, what if I had committed the sin omission and not had the Luttenbeckers over? Would you have known? No, but we wouldn't have had bikes to take back to Senegal. And, you know, that really touched my heart. And since His Wheels' inception, we have given away 1,360 bikes, over 50 trikes that in some way are His Wheels, either a factory in North Africa that built 20. We just sent 15 to Ethiopia with Soto Christian Hospital. And we are talking with some amputee villages in Sierra Leone about starting some factories there. And we have touched, my goal was 100 bicycles, and we have touched people affiliated with 83 countries. And we've almost touched as many countries as was my goal of the number of bikes I wanted to give away. We've provided bikes for immigrants and refugees. I think the number's in the 300s. And you can, if you ride around Wheaton, you might see our logo on bikes. And it's fun to see where all they are, but that means that's a bike that His Wheels has donated. We've touched missionaries from 41 organizations serving in 45 different countries, home on furlough. So a song that hit me, and I will close with this, is a song we most of us know, Trust and Obey. It says, not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, but our toil he doth richly repay. Not a grief nor a loss, not a frown or a cross, but is blessed if we trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of his love until all on the altar we lay. For the favor he shows and the joy he bestows are for them who will trust and obey. Then in fellowship sweet, we will sit at his feet or will walk by his side in the way. What he says we will do, where he sends we will go. Never fear, only trust and obey. God never asks us to do something for his kingdom that is human-sized. And if it is, you might reconsider if it's what he's asking you to do. He asks us to go beyond our ability. He wants the glory. And that is what, that's when we know we're right in the center of what he wants. I'm grateful we're going to pay August's rent and a few more. But I don't really know where the whole year's rent is going to come from. But that's not what God asked me. Even if we close his wheels down because we can't pay the rent, I've still succeeded because I trusted and obeyed. That's my challenge for you. And let me close in prayer. Lord Jesus, we come before you and we thank you that you are the one who is the author. And the story you are writing does not need our editorial revisions. And it is a book that will be worth reading. It is a story that will be worth looking at. And Lord, may we allow you to write the story you want through our lives. We give you the praise for indeed you are worthy. In your name, Jesus. Amen.